Well, thanks very much for inviting me to this. I was here a long time ago when it was a music venue. I'm glad to see it's now been taken over by a bunch of nerds. That's fantastic, because of course I was a nerd. And I apologize for my dress. I came from work, and I work with humans, and I have to dress like this. What I've come to talk to you about is a slightly insane project, which is called Plan 28, which is a charity that I've set up to build Charles Babbage's analytical engine. Babbage was probably the ultimate hipster geek, because he was a geek before there were geeks, in the middle of the 1800s. If you ever see a picture of him, he looks, despite his incredible wealth, disheveled, his hair is all over the place. He never seems to be able to bother to put the right things on. He's always got grease all over his hands and things like that, because, of course, it was a mechanical machine he was making. One of Babbage's machines has been made. This is the difference engine number 2. This is a bloody great calculator. That's not how he described it. You turn this handle here. These things here are all cogs, made out of brass, pretty much, and they've got numbers on them. And they successively add up. And out on the end here, there's a printer. You can see the paper here. And you get numbers out the other end. This thing uses the method of differences. If there are any mathematicians here, you'll know what that is. But it lets you pretty much calculate any polynomial function. And this was very useful when you had a big empire to manage, because you had to get books of tables for doing navigation and for other sorts of mathematical calculations that were hard to do because you only had people. Computers were people at that time, right, who computed. Unfortunately, he never built it. It was built in the 90s and early 2000s by the Science Museum in London, and it does work. He left plans for all these machines. This particular one is pretty simple in a way. It just does successive addition. It's not a computer. It's a fixed program, if you like, calculator. If you go to the Science Museum, sometimes they demonstrate it. It's quite amazing. The other side of it, there is the carry mechanism. If you remember from school doing addition, you have to sort of carry the ones. We have to do that in brass here, and it's quite beautiful. It spirals up like this, like a ballerina. What I'm trying to build is something a lot bigger. That weighs a few tons. That's not impressive enough for me. I want to build this thing. I'm going to zoom in on this in a minute. This is the plan of one of the plans of Babbage's, what he calls down here, great calculating engine. This is a computer. And when I say a computer, it is actually, from a computer scientist's perspective, Turing complete. That is, it will run any program we can think of. It has quite a lot of interesting features. For the first thing to look at is this scale along. This is 1 foot. So this is not a microcomputer by any sense. The other thing is what you're looking at here is an aerial view. So if you go back to that image there, this is looking down on top of one of these, and each of those circles is a cog. This thing in the middle here is an enormous cog. In fact, it's an enormous stack of cogs. Each of these things is a stack of something like 30 cogs on top of each other. So this is going to weigh many tons. And there's actually a question about where we're going to put it, because the floor has to be pretty strong. But I want to zoom in and just show you some of the features of it. Bear in mind, this was first described in 1836. This particular plan is from 1840. Babbage kept refining this. He had built bits of his engines with the help of the British government, spending millions of pounds on it. When he came up with this idea, like a good nerd, he had no problem going to the government and saying, yeah, you know that machine you've spent millions of pounds not building? It's crap. This is what you need to build. And the Prime Minister at the time, Robert Peel, was like, just basically, in number 10 Downing Street, Babbage went and told him, forget it, you need to do this. And they had an argument, which Babbage ended with the ultimate insult, which was, I bid you good day, sir. So, I mean, that was pretty rough at that period, so that's the Prime Minister. So, what he wanted to build was this thing. So, if we just take a look at it, I'm going to show you why this is actually a real computer, although you wouldn't recognize it today. This is the memory. And it's expandable. The more memory you want, you just keep going this way. Okay. Each of these things here is a stack of cogs. It's a stack of cogs exactly like these stacks of cogs here. Each of those cogs has a number 0 to 9 on it. You stack them up, you get a decimal, a long decimal number. The smallest machine he describes has 30-digit precision, and it has 50 registers in this direction. It's about a 1K machine, roughly the smallest one. All entirely mechanical. These things move in and out. There's a bus along here. He calls the bus the rack. And basically, there's a tooth. You have to imagine these have got teeth on all these things. This has got teeth on it. When you want to read something, you push the cogs against the rack. It costs 30 racks because you're reading in parallel. And you move it. And you move it here. And that thing is the data bus. Basically, that's where the data goes into this massive thing, which is a CPU. The CPU is pretty simple. It can do addition, multiplication, division, and subtraction up to double precision, up to 60 digits at a time if you want it to. It has some interesting features. These things here are what they call the table wheels. So basically, in order to do multiplication, he calculates, given the number you're doing, one times it, two times it, three times it, four times it, then he can do a successive addition, shifting up and necessary as you go along. So he can actually calculate, do multiplication very fast. He also realized that all this moving data into the CPU, moving it back, because what it does is it goes around like this, comes out the bus here and gets written back, was going to be very wasteful. So he implemented instruction pipelining. He could do multiple things at once. So this is one of the problems with Babbage. He's a classic nerd, right? This is 1840. He died age 79, having never built this, because every time he'd get one of these, imagine this plan is 3 meters by 2 meters, a huge piece of paper. He'd go, yeah, I really need instruction pipelining. No, this thing's never going to work. So he gets another one. The charity I've set up is called Plan 28, because we think Plan 28, this is Plan 25, is the closest to a working computer. But the idea of the instruction pipelining was, while you're doing some calculating here, you can be bringing in your next bunch of data over here. All this is controlled by punch cards. Three sets of punch cards here. The number cards, the variable cards, and the operation cards. The operation cards have instructions on them. They tell the computer what to do. The number cards literally have constant values for loading into memory. So that's how you set the thing up. And the variable cards tell you which memory location your operation refers to. So you can say your add, and then you can get memory location 6 and memory location 7, and put it back in memory location 8. Now, all that's all very well, but then Babbage, of course, said, well, it's not enough just to have instructions. You've got to decode instructions to make this whole thing operate. Now, by the way, this is a 2-foot diameter cog in the middle, a stack of them, that's just turning this whole thing by steam. So for that, he invented microcode. If you know your programmers here, he realized he needed some program within the computer. This is called, by the way, this whole thing here, the CPU, is called the mill. So you imagine the time he was living in, a mill was a metaphor for like this incredible work, right? So this is the mill. Numbers come in, get milled into new numbers. These things here are called barrels. And what they are is they are literally little wooden barrels with nails essentially stuck in them, like in a barrel organ. And those are that's the microcode. So that actually coordinates this whole system of cogs here. These two big cogs are the main accumulator, so the main center of the CPU. So basically, your data comes in, whizzes around here, gets loaded on here, and these barrels are then coordinating the actual instructions. And all this stuff is in motion. And not just circular motion, but in and out motion. So, you know, if you need an instruction, if you need a value from here, for example, this whole thing moves in and engages with cogs and gets used. So this is the 4 times times table. Boom, pop it into there. And bring it all the way around. There's loads of other crazy features. This is a 30-digit decimal machine. He considered using binary. For simplification, he considered using hexadecimal, he considered using base 12. Eventually, he settled on decimal for the ease of reading it. What's missing from here is the printer. Now, he specified 2 mechanisms for getting data out. One was the printer. The printer is identical to this. It is actually the same thing. He just says, go get the one from the difference engine number 2. I've already designed that. It's going to work. He had never built it, right? You go get the printer, you plug the printer in, and you get your results out. And that's done by one of the instructions saying, print whatever's in memory location X. The other thing he wanted was to be able to draw. Now, what he wanted to do was mathematical functions. So he actually there's another plan which has a plotter with a pen on it. And so what you do is you take successive values out of memory and you move it around. So he never built it. 1836 was really the beginning of this. So I thought, you know, why not do that? You know, it shouldn't be too hard. So I set up a charity to do this called Plan 28, and I persuaded Doran Swade, who is the man who built the difference engine number 2 at the Science Museum, to join me. So he's working on it with me. There are 4 things. One is to digitize the entire Babbage archive the Science Museum has done. We managed to persuade the Science Museum this was a good idea, and they did it. And next year it'll be made public. We have to study them. He left thousands of pages of notes, hundreds of plans like the ones you've seen, constant adjustments. Figure out what we're going to build, simulate it in software. The fun thing is we can actually do a physical simulation, right, and debug it in software, and then build it. It'll probably take up about the amount, you know, this sort of size space. Why? Well, you know, why not? And I can say that to this group. Most people are like, why do you want to do this? And I just want to say, isn't it obvious? You know, so one thing is to say, look, you know, there was this computer in 1836. I'd like to show that it actually worked. I mean, we know from the difference engine number 2 that it worked. The other interesting thing is this is a computer you could actually see working. It has incredible parallels with silicon computers, but you can walk around it and appreciate what it does. And the other thing is to make people think great thoughts. I personally, as a student here in Oxford, when they were building the difference engine number 2 at the Science Museum, kept going and looking at it and thinking, oh my goodness, no, I haven't had any great thoughts, but I've had some thoughts based on it. But to inspire people. And the really interesting thing is that there's this 100-year gap. 1836, Charles Babbage describes the computer, the whole thing. And it's exactly 100 years later that Alan Turing publishes his paper and says, you know, we could build a computer like this. You know, he's had an infinite tape. I mean, he was using a tape. Babbage was using cogs, basically. But there was this 100-year gap. And you sort of think if somebody looks at the analytical engine, they could say to themselves, what should I be thinking that's 100 years out? That's really the sort of the educational goal of the thing. It'll probably take about 10 years, unfortunately. And I'd like to be done by 2021. And I keep reminding myself, of course, that Babbage died before completing. I sort of got this... it sort of worries me every time I think about that, because it's like, yeah. Every time this belong, I sort of hear Yoda saying, you know, it'll forever will it dominate your destiny, you know, this thing, you know, has happened to Babbage. But... That's what, you know, I've set out to do. Now, one last thing. You cannot mention Babbage without somebody saying, what about Ada Lovelace? Which is very important. Ada Lovelace was Byron's daughter. You know, mad, bad, and dangerous to know Lord Byron. And his daughter had quite a lot of his attributes. She's probably the only person, when Babbage was alive, who really understood what Babbage was on about. She was a little bit his protege. She was a lot younger than him and died very young in childbirth, as was the problem at the time, of course, in her 30s. But a lot of people say she's the first programmer. I actually think she's something better than the first programmer, because, of course, the machine was never built. And there's some doubt about, did Babbage actually write the program? Anyway, what's even more interesting is that Babbage only thought of it as a numbers machine. He was only interested in mathematical functions. And Lovelace, in the notes, this famous paper that was written about it, is the one who says, yeah, well, numbers are just numbers. You know, you can use them for other stuff. And she specifically says text and music. And so she, for me, is really, if you want to talk about somebody who was looking ahead, Babbage built this massive machine. He's heads down thinking, oh, I'm going to build this thing. It's going to be massive. And the government's going to give me millions of pounds. And, you know, the Duke of Wellington comes around to his house and he basically blows him off to go work on cogs. But Lovelace really saw this future. So, you know, when you think about Lovelace, some people say the first programmer. I think that's actually doing her a disservice. I think she saw something so much bigger, which was that Babbage actually said, once the machine is built, it will change the course of science forever. So he was thinking about science, and Lovelace said, don't restrict yourself to science. There's a lot more. Thanks very much.